Have you heard the one about the researcher doing a PhD in stand-up comedy?
A sign that I'm doing it right will be if my examiners get drunk and then heckle me during the viva.
That's Kate Fox. She's in the final stages of writing up her PhD at the University of Leeds on being funny and from the north of England. And she's also a stand-up comedian.
Sometimes people say, don't you find that looking at stand-up comedy sucks all the joy out of it? And I'm like, why would analysing the normative social hegemonies underlying my joke structures suck all the joy out of them?
As part of her research, Kate is looking at how humour can be used to make a serious point by comedians, by politicians, and even by academics.
Basically, at the beginning of the thesis, I said, if I cannot make my PhD funny, then to me, it will have failed. Because if I'm trying to say that humour is a way to make serious points and to affect change in the world, then I should be able to do it within my thesis.
We'll come back to that a bit later and what Kate actually did in her thesis to make it funny. But before she got to writing it up, she hit upon a problem. She wanted to find a word that would sum up what it is to use humour for serious purposes. She couldn't find one. So what did she do? She made one up.
So making up the word, I was kind of taking the mickey, in some senses, out of French philosophers like Derrida, who it felt like, you know, he couldn't go a day without making up a new word. I mashed the words humour and gravitas together, came up with humitas, which does possibly sound like a cleaning company or somewhere that jokes go to die. But humitas, it does do that thing that I wanted it to do of saying, look, this is humour that is not mere play, it is useful.
For Kate, humitas is a kind of rhetoric, somebody using humour in what would normally be a serious, formal occasion, but in a way that advances their point. Kate gives the example of an Icelandic politician who she says is fantastically humortastic.
Jón Gnarr, who was the former mayor of Reykjavik, who really didn't see a distinction between his serious speech and his joking speech. He was an anarcho-surrealist who was funny all the time, who saw politics as both ridiculous and powerful at the same time. And there's something really important about that in a time of Trump, where he is making politics feel merely ridiculous and not using humour in a skilled way. Jón Gnarr both recognise that politicians are jokes and that they can affect change in the world. And I think that comes closer to how many people are feeling today about politics and politicians because of a sense of alienation, really, around how politics can speak to them and their lives.
Stand-up comedians are also doing this in a slightly different way, by becoming activists in their own right. Kate points to Gráinne Maguire, an Irish comedian who became involved in a campaign back in 2015 to get the Irish government to change its anti-abortion laws.
And she was involved in a Twitter campaign, getting people to send details of their periods to the Irish premier.
The premier at the time, Enda Kenny, was inundated with tweets from women who took Maguire's lead and told him details of their menstrual cycle.
So she was using her comedy capital, really, in two ways. First of all, she was a stand-up, and second of all, she was doing a funny campaign and getting people involved.
While these comedians are stepping out of the theatres and comedy clubs they're used to, something similar has been happening within academia. Researchers are taking to the stage.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. Thank you. My name is Johan Fazy, as he obviously couldn't pronounce, and I'm from the University of Dundee. Thank you.
Johan is a professor of geography and environmental science and an interdisciplinary researcher.
Now, I'm what they call an interdisciplinary researcher. That basically means being disciplined at trying to do everything, being crap at it and getting nothing done.
He's also tried his hand at stand-up comedy at Bright Club Dundee, a comedy night in the Scottish university town where all the performers are academics. This is a recording from a gig back in 2014 entitled Whose Reality Is It Anyway?
So, of course, for anyone who spent a long time working in another culture and spending time living in another culture, it's not until you get, that we'll appreciate, it's not until you get home that it really hits you. It's kind of like having a hangover. You feel shit, but you just can't wait to do it again. And this phenomenon was perfectly articulated in a book called The Innocent Anthropologist. And it's by a guy called Nigel Barley. And at the end of the book, in the final pages, Nigel phones the friend whose conversation had sent him to the field in the first place. He said, "Hi, you're back. Yes. Was it boring? Yes. Did you get very sick? Oh, yes. Did you bring back notes you can't make head or tail of? Forget to ask all the important questions? Oh, yes. So when are you going back?" And I laughed feebly that a number of years later, I found myself back in Dundee. Thank you very much.
Bright Club was born back in 2009. I spoke to Steve Cross, one of its founders, who was working at University College London at the time, and hit upon the idea of training academics to do stand-up comedy. What started as a variety show quickly became a regular comedy night, with Bright Club starting up all over the country. There are currently 6 or 7 in the UK, the number fluctuates, with nights also taking place in Ireland, Australia, Belgium and Spain. I asked Steve, who now runs a number of other science communication initiatives involving comedy and performance, what were some of the funniest things he's seen at a Bright Club?
Well, sometimes it's the ones where you think this can't possibly ever be a Bright Club set. So we had a political scientist whose area of research is the use of violence in political terrorism, who did 8 minutes of stand-up that offended no one, attacked nobody weak. And it's that sort of thing where people say, "My work's not funny." And it's like, well, the job isn't to make your work funny. It's to be funny while you talk about your work. And that's where it's really nice when we get medics or public health people or immunologists talking about very, very serious issues, maternal death in developing nations. They get their message across without poking fun at either the mothers or the children or the healthcare systems in those nations. But they can poke fun at the structure of world capitalism that allows these things to happen. They can poke fun at me for asking them to go on stage and be funny while they talk about maternal death. That's the sort of thing that really appeals, is saying, let's use the special license of comedy to talk about stuff that really matters as entertainment, even though simultaneously you are learning about research and sometimes really fundamental, really quite challenging research.
Using humour in this way, says Steve, allows the researcher to get to a bigger truth about their subject that they can only ever scratch the surface of in a journal article or conference paper. But these Bright Club events are a stark contrast to what's usually allowed within the formal structures of academia.
People really don't expect academics to be funny, at least not intentionally so.
This is Kate Watson, Professor of Education at the University of Stirling.
Academics expect their work to be taken seriously, and if you're funny, that seems to undermine that view. And I think this is a misunderstanding among academics, scientists and social scientists in particular. And they don't seem to understand the importance of humour in understanding what it is to be human.
Unlike Kate Fox, this Kate is no stand-up comedian herself, but she's among a growing group of academics pushing for greater recognition of humour within social science research. She's faced criticism along the way. She was told by one peer reviewer who had read an article that she'd written for submission to a journal that she'd brought social science into disrepute because she'd used satire to make a point.
On another occasion, I got into very serious bother with a paper in which I'd done a satirical critique of education policy and pointing out that sort of the inherent absurdity of this particular piece of policy. And I was actually called to give an account of myself by a very senior policymaker. And in a way that I did feel that I was being lent on, but in a way also, although that was quite unpleasant, I did take heart from thinking that actually I joined a long list of humorous writers who have offended the authorities. And I think that's really one of the very important things that humour can do, is that it can subvert policy. It's a way of speaking truth to power.
She says that humour, and irony in particular, has been used by social scientists for hundreds of years.
The importance for social scientists is that irony allows you to see things in new and previously unsuspected ways. So irony is a way of overturning conventional views. So, and it allows us to examine our assumptions so that we can arrive at perhaps alternative interpretations of what's going on in the social world. And by doing that, it allows then perhaps the possibility for new solutions to emerge for some of the wicked problems that beset us.
Kate points to the example of the famous North American sociologist Irvin Goffman as one of the greatest exponents of irony in the social sciences. In a book called Asylums, published in the early 1960s, he wrote about the inmates and staff of mental hospitals.
And he ends up completely overturning our expectations of what constitutes rational and irrational behaviour. And so in a way, it's the patients that end up as moral exemplars for the rest of us.
Kate hopes that in the future, more social scientists will consider humour and irony as one more tool that they can use to get people seeing the world in a different way. That's what stand-up comedian, cum academic Kate Fox is trying to do. She recently made an episode of a BBC Radio 4 show called The Price of Happiness, which she describes as a show about class and class in-betweenness. It's influenced by her PhD research about northernness and stand-up. Here's a short clip, courtesy of the production company, Impatient Productions, who made the show for the BBC.
In writing this show, I have discovered that people feel uncomfortable admitting what class they think they are in public. I have sometimes wished that I was asking them about something they'd be happier to own up to, like having an STD or having murdered someone or watching Mrs. Brown's Boys. Obviously, it depends where I perform it. The BBC wanted me to perform this show here in Newcastle because they said it's closer to my natural habitat. Sometimes you will get middle-class people in the audience who don't want to speak up when I ask things because they think the proud working-class people will look down on them. Sometimes you get working-class people in the audience who don't want to speak up because they think the proud middle-class people will look down on them. Sometimes it's a relief if you get an MP in who everyone can proudly look down on.
As part of her PhD, she's written another stand-up show called Lots of Planets Have a North, which is a line from the TV show Doctor Who. The show is a form of what's called autoethnography, a performance of her own life. But don't worry, she hasn't left the comedy out of her written thesis either. In order to use humitas within her own PhD thesis, every now and then, another voice will pop up within the text in italics.
Every now and then it'll just perhaps point out that I'm being pretentious or it'll disagree with me. It has become almost another voice. And it also, it will pop up with jokes as well.
Kate says that other scholars before her have pointed out that stand-ups are basically anthropologists anyway. They perform shows using material about their own life, about stuff they've researched on other people, or about a particular cultural context, and they critique it as they go along.
So for me, it isn't really a very big leap to say, OK, well, if a stand-up can be an ethnographer, then an ethnographer can surely be a stand-up.
Jokes aside, there is a wider point here, that humour, which can be cutting, raw and subversive, allows us to see the world in new ways. And if that is part of what academics are trying to do, then they shouldn't be scared to embrace it.